Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Empowerment Network. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rohn, coming to you today live with Community Conversations. Today we're going to be talking again with Brother George. He is going to inform us and educate us on what it is that has happened to us and the direction that we should go in. Today we are celebrating ourselves, as always, in the education piece of the Empowerment 365 NAAEA program. So the NAAEA, let's talk about that for just a minute. It's basically an organization that is designed to empower African Americans, right? It is to ensure that the needs of the African American community are met through the development of programs and services that educate, inspire, motivate, and empower the African American community in these five areas. Politics. We're going to learn about politics, and we're going to understand the system that works here. Economics, the economic system as well, how to operate in the capitalistic system that we don't become complete consumers, but we're able to navigate this system and become full participants. Athletics, health, fitness, nutrition, and wellness. That is being able to take care of your body and your health, because your health is your wealth. And then there's culture, cultural programs, and then they teach us more about ourselves, and we'll delve into that a bit more today, and then an overall comprehensive education of our people that involves enlightenment, education on every level, and being able to know what it is that we're doing. And so we've come a long way from our enslavement, and we want to better ourselves. We are founders of this country. There's no doubt about it. So we're not second-class citizens, because it is clear that our ancestors built this country, and so we have a full stake and claim in it, and we have the right to do what we will in terms of citizens to protect ourselves and to develop ourselves and live positive, prosperous, and peaceful lives. That is the NAEA. Go to the webpage, www.naaea.weebly.com, and check out the organization. And if you're interested in becoming a member, please join. We need all of us to come together. Unity in the community works. So I would like for you also do your research on Black Wall Street and Tulsa. I think there's a lot that we can learn about the community unity from that standpoint. And now to our community conversation. Today we welcome back Brother George, and our topic for today is what happened to us in slavery. What happened to us in slavery? You don't want to miss it. I am going to encourage you to share this program with your friends, your family, and your relatives, and even some people that you don't like. We need to empower ourselves and educate and inspire and motivate. I'm going to welcome in my brother and good friend, Brother George, to the show. Welcome to the show, Brother George. Are you there?
Yes, sir, I am, and thank you for the invitation. Today's topic, you know, what actually happened to us in slavery that makes us so disunified. Just to start that conversation off, the European originally, the slave-making process started with the Arabs. Once we were defeated and were pushed out of the Iberian Peninsula, which is Spain and Portugal today, which we had a civilization that we had built there for 800 years, and it was probably the most marvelous civilization that this world has ever known. And most writers that write on that civilization say that. Now, what happened in Iberia, in Spain and Portugal, and the name of that place that we call it Al-Andalusia. and that's to walk by the light, walk in the light. And what happened was once we were successfully defeated after 800 years of governmental occupation and building and constructing, I mean, we did great things in Europe. We really brought Europe back from its dark age after the Roman Empire was toppled by the Vandals. And the Vandals were a group that came down from Germany that conquered the Roman Empire. And from then on, the Vandals and the Visigoths ended up controlling that area. And so the ones that the Moorish Empire defeated in 711 was the Visigothic army under King Roderick. And at any rate, after we were defeated in 1491, that's why you don't hear any history until 1492 with Christopher Columbus, because the same roads that different people came in, they traveled those same roads out to find wealth and riches, because that's what they were after at the time. They were after resources, and they wanted wealth and riches, and they wanted to control the world. And so once we were defeated and pushed back into Northwest Africa by the Arabs, because there were two Islamic portions of the Islamic Empire. It was the Moorish Empire and the Ottoman Empire. Now, the Ottoman Empire, you may know something about, because the Ottoman Empire is like Iran, Iraq, Arabia, those places over there in Western Asia. And also, you know, the Persians, that's when you talk about the Persians, that was a part of the Ottoman Empire. Then the country of Turkey, you know, which was a white country, and that's why there were some white Muslims in Turkey. And so that particular group, which was a lighter-skinned group, but that's the history of Islam, and I don't really want to try to go into that because our time is limited on what we're talking about. But once the Ottomans joined on with the Europeans and turned in against us, we were defeated and pushed out of Europe back into Africa. Once we were pushed back into Africa, at that point, the Arabs began to sell us as slaves because of our skills. I mean, we were scientists, we were doctors, lawyers. And so back then, you would sell somebody, you know, based on their abilities for a period of time, which was like an indentured servitude. Now, where I'm going to start at is we came in, once the Europeans started slave trading with us, we came in as the Moors, and they turned us into the Negro. And so I'm going to start at that point.
Wow, great opening, brother. And so what I'm hearing is there's an empire, because our people need to know this history. There is a Moorish empire that was developed and organized and skilled that basically built Europe, right? And so can you tell us a little bit more about the Moors and the Moorish Empire in terms of what it is that they did and what they were all about, and kind of give us a reference of time frame in terms of the existence of the Moorish Empire in terms of a historical context?
Yes, sir. Well, actually, with the term Moor goes all the way back to the days of Hannibal. But I don't want to go all the way back to the Carthaginian period. I just want to talk about the Moors of more recent times from the 700s. When Islam initially hit the African continent in a way where as aggressive, like seeking conquest, because originally they were not trying to get you to become Muslim, except for those who looked like us. It was really about conquest. and about reform to the world. And so initially when they came into Africa and they came in with the one God concept, we already believed in one God. So it was easy for us to accept that concept. And so a strange occurrence happened in about 709, 710. There was a Spanish, it wasn't called Spain then, but he was from Iberia, and he was a nobleman, and his name escapes me right now, but he sent his daughter to Iberia into the Visigothic capital, and he knew King Roderick. They were personal friends, and he sent his daughter there to be educated in the ways of his people because he was at an outpost that was in North Africa. Back then, they had outposts and different things in different countries, the same way you do now. And he sent his daughter there to be educated, to learn their culture and all of that. So Roderick got his daughter over there, and he raped his daughter. So when he raped his daughter, he was very upset with that, you know. So what he did was, at that time, Africa was going through, West Africa was going through a lot of changes with the way that the land was getting more and more desert, and it was less area to, you know, fertile land to work with. And up in Iberia, there was plenty of fertile land. And so what this nobleman did was he talked to the Moorish emperor, and he told him, he said, if you would go into Iberia and avenge my daughter, then I'll show you how to get as much land as you want, because I know where the fertile land is at, and you could take it, and it'll be yours. So he sent a reconnaissance of about 400 soldiers, and he sent him with a general named General Tariff. And if you recall from your history classes, there's a such thing as a tariff tax. Well, the one who imposed that tariff tax in Spain was General Tariff. So General Tariff, he went up there, and he pretty much took Iberia pretty easy. You know, he went on to the shores, and he took, you know, the major city that was there, and bam, you know, they was like in business. Well, the only problem was that King Roderick and his 40,000 troops was up north fighting in another battle. So he really didn't face the real battle. And so when King Roderick came back, he came right back and took that territory right back from General Tariff. And so when he came back, he said, you know, they came back and they was, you know, a lot more than what we thought they were, and they was able to push us back out. So he said, okay. So he said, well, you know, what they like? He said, well, if you send a decent force up there with a good general, you know, we could take them. You know, so he got his best general, and this general's name was General Tariq. And the name Tariq is a word that transfers over to Gibraltar. So where he land, they call it the Rock of Tariq. And today you call it the Rock of Gibraltar. And that's where the Moors defeated the Visigothic army. And General Tariq was able to take the Iberian Peninsula. At the time that they took the Iberian Peninsula, they started a civilization that lasted for 800 years.
Okay, great, brother. Now, why is this important for African Americans particularly to understand this information, and how can they use it going forward? Right, so this is a great history lesson, right? Great information. But I want our people to understand the significance of it, and then how
we begin to understand the role that slavery played and how that interchange or exchange happened?
Well, initially, when we were, when they began the, what they call the Atlantic slave trade, we were very highly educated, you know, culturally sophisticated people. You know, we had a system, we lived by certain rules, and, you know, and we was continuing to live by that when we, even when they brought us here to the Americas. Now, what they did in South Carolina, one of the slave owners realized that as long as you keep the people that's in the same family group or the same tribal groups together, they're communicating with each other, and eventually these people are going to be able to win their freedom because they plan in, they know each other, they talk in the same language. You got to start dividing them up because that way you can create, you know, division between them by getting different groups that don't like each other to be around each other, and then you got a better mix there. So they began to set up ways to what they call season us on the islands. And so some of the things that they would do on the islands to season us was they would take the strongest leader and they would tie him off in four directions with ropes on four different horses, you know, going in four different directions, and they would tar and feather him, light him on fire, and then rip him apart in front of the people. And what that did was, because that was the strongest, most powerful leader, that made the people feel, damn, if they could do that to him, then they could do that to any of us. And so what it did was it put fear in us from the beginning. Now, in the beginning, you're always going to have people that's not enough to really scare them into acting the way that they wanted us to act. And so there were still some of us that still challenged them and were killed. And so for a long period of time, it took a lot of abuse and a lot of killing to get us to eventually submit ourselves to going to the fields and working.
Okay, so
1492, that's when history tells us that Christopher Columbus discovered the Americas. What was happening in the Moorish Empire around that time, which brings us inside of this, I would call it the intermediate period of our control of the Iberian Peninsula, the Spanish usurping their own power, and then the enslavement. How, can you talk about that and how all that came together?
Well, basically, the way that it came together was a lot of the Spaniards and Portuguese already knew us. So they almost could, like, pick who they wanted during that time. Now, remember, the actual, you know, like, Atlantic slave trade didn't start until 1519. Okay, so that's like almost, 20 or 30 years after this particular time. Okay, so in the meantime, these people already knew and had connections with us because the Moorish Empire stretched all up and down the west coast of Africa and into Europe. So the Europeans were traveling to different parts of the Moorish Empire also. So these were people that actually knew you. And I'm inclined to believe that was one of the major reasons why they didn't want us to read. Because even in the Willie Lynch paper, it said, don't allow them to experience anything that will connect them back with their historical continuity, which was something that they broke. They broke that line, like they unplugged us from our historical self so that they could convert us into something else. And but what was going on in the Moorish Empire at that time was once we came back to Africa, in the first place, there are more empires that was in Africa other than the Moors. And so a lot of fighting broke out. There was a breakdown of even within the Moorish Empire, there were breakdowns of how, you know, who was going to be the Khalifa and how things was going to be done since we've been conquered and we're out of Iberia, and who's going to side and be with the Arabs and who's going to stand with, you know, it was just a lot of stuff that was going on and needed to be ironed out, which usually happens at the end of a war with a defeated people. The ones who are victorious, they get what they want. So, but we were defeated. And so now it's like, how do you regroup? Because during that time, they also destroyed our universities that were on the west coast of Africa. And one of the interesting things is that whenever they destroy one of our empires, they always have this huge book burning, you know. And the funny thing about the book burnings in with the Moorish Empire was that we did so much scientific study and so much scientific research, and we introduced so many different scientific, you know, information and teaching to Europe, that it's ironic that they burnt all these books in the 1400s at the request of the Pope of Rome, that he said, burn it all because it's works of the devil. However, in the 15th and 16th century were the times of what you call the scientific revolution. And so all of these Europeans was coming up with scientific inventions. Somebody said they might have got a hold of some of the Moorish books and put their own name on it.
All right, so let me ask you this. You talked about this historical self, right? Can you talk about what that was and what we were, and the contrast, would you, if you would, what we were in terms of what this Moorish Empire is and how we became enslaved and how we transitioned into what they would call Negroes?
Well, when I start talking about our people, I get very excited, and sometimes I get on the track that I should have been answering that question before. What we were was a very organized people. We were very mission-oriented. We were we had customs and systems of how our women, you know, were respected and treated and different things, because the Islam of the Moorish Empire was different than the Islam of the Ottoman Empire. You know, like this idea of women being treated inferior and all that, that wasn't a part of the Moorish Empire. We didn't treat our women like that. And it's not like that even today. A lot of those things that you hear that sound ridiculous are, the Arabs are doing that stuff, you know. But we had a culture, and basically it was a long-standing culture that was the same as the one that was 4,000 years before that, you know, because the rules were already set. You know, like the 42 laws of Maat, they were already set. And basically the people in Africa continue to go by those laws or some version of it. You know, you don't always keep the exact same version of something, but you can create something from something else. And for the most part, the majority of Africa was living under those rules until they came in with all this colonial, you know, ways of doing things, which was European culture. But once we were put into what they call chattel slavery, which what I'm talking about is when, you know, with all the misuse, some of it, I don't even like talking about it, you know, because it's so be dehumanizing that I don't want people to feel like they got to get revenge from somebody for doing a lot of the things that they did to us to get us to the point where we would be their chattel and where we would be what was converted into the nigger, which was a person, a human being that was conditioned to do things in whichever way was best suited for the Europeans that looked at us as being the property.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that we were Moors, and then we became property. And there was a transition. Something happened where we were conquered or we lost the war, and then we went into enslavement. And so can you pick up from there and talk about what slavery did to us and how slavery impacted us, but also in some previous conversations, we talked about some treaties that were made. Can you add that in as we go along?
Or other people can research.
Okay. Now, in the beginning, like I said, when we were being sold to individuals by the Arabs really didn't try to sell us into chattel slavery. They were selling us into the same type of slavery that had existed for thousands of years, which was you do a certain amount of work based on what your trade was, what you were good at, and that family that owned you could sell you out to rent you out to people that could use your skills, and then they would get paid a large portion of what you earned, and so that's how things initially got started. But once the European started getting involved with the slave trade, because they weren't originally involved with the slave trade, once they got involved with the slave trade and they brought us to America because they wanted us to build America for them, because they knew that we could build because we had built Europe back up. And so sometimes that doesn't make sense to people that, how can you build when you don't know anything anymore? You're not the same scientific people. Well, a people's genetic blueprint never leaves them. A people's collective ability to do something, it never leaves them. And that's why we were able to even invent things during the times that we were in slavery, because that mindset, that creative essence about us was still there. And our ability to build with block, with masonry, was still there. And so they used that, and they had learned a lot of the information from the universities that we set up there, and they had also started joining some of the fraternal orders that we set up there, dealing with masonry, dealing with building, dealing with the thought of the building, the ability to build blocks, and build the civilization. They learned those things from us, and then they simply got us to execute them because they had all the material to tell you exactly what to do. And in a way, like once you start doing something that you've always done, you'll just do it well. And so basically they used our backs to build this country. But for the most part, it was the separation of the separation of families, the breaking down of making the black female, you know, the Moorish females feel unprotected, you know, that the white man could just do whatever he wanted to do with them. And so when he would rape them and have sex with another man's woman, you know, because we didn't officially have marriage back then they would feel like, It's nothing that you can do to prevent this man. You can't even protect me from somebody that I don't want to touch me. So over time, over hundreds of years, because we were in slavery for hundreds of years, over probably about 50 years of this happening, our women felt like we couldn't defend them no more. So how can you look at a male as like the head of the household, which was the old tradition, as the head of the household anymore when he can't even defend the household and doesn't even try. Because once they realize that if you try to defy their acts, they would kill you. So when our women had a male child, they would condition our male children to be docile, to do whatever that man wants you to do, because if you don't, he's going to kill you. And so that's when we're bent over. We're no longer the stand up, upright, Moorish looking hardcore soldier no more. We're bent over and we're humbled and we're, you know, submissive to his will.
Okay. So we'll do a basic recap. From what I hear you say, we built Europe or we built Spain, right? We had libraries that they basically conquered and took the books and learned from them and burned some of them. We had a spiritual system, and inside of that spiritual system, you talked about the 42 laws of my, and I'd like for the listeners to go out and look up that. But I want you to speak to a definition of more, right? So we define that for me, and then we'll go into the last half of the conversation.
Now, the term more is a word that, you know, in short means black. You know, more means black. And originally, they called us, the Romans started calling us black, and started calling us Moors in way back in B.C. They were beginning to call us Moors, like in 100 B.C. And 200 B.C. Around in that time, they started calling us More or More. And so, you know, it's different words that translate into more, but more means black. Now, when people ask you for an exact definition, like what's the difference between a Moor and another African? Well, Moors, we were like the half-breeds. You know, we were, when they talk about ancient Egypt, because we actually migrated from Egypt across the Maghreb, which is North Africa, and we in different empires were sprouting up along the way, and the Carthaginian Empire was one of them. But the Moor is a mixed breed of African. We're about 25% Asian and 75% African. So you're an African. It's not a question of that. But the idea is that a Moor is something that was a little different than, let's say, the Ethiopian, which was the dark-skinned, you know, dark Arab, or the Congolese African. We lived on the coastlines, and we had a lot of contact with the other races, especially the Asian and European races, and that's really, when you talk about a Moor, that's what a Moor is.
In Concord, right, in the 1490s, and then around 1519, the first Moors or the first Africans came to America, and we went through this process of being chattel. Now, I know you mentioned that we were here prior to the Native Americans coming in. Can you discuss that briefly?
Now, that part, you're starting to get into the Aboriginal, okay? Because actually, our true classification should be Aboriginal Moors. Now, the Moorish Empire spanned across the Atlantic Ocean, and it was on the west coast of Africa and on the east coast of mostly South America and Central America, around in there. And I think that North America, the reason why we weren't here in mass was because of the climate, that the climate was warmer in the southern part of the hemisphere, the southern hemisphere, and we pretty much stayed down there. And that's why You find so many, like, African stone heads that are 1,000 years old, and you find pyramids that were built down there that are identical to the ones in Egypt or Kemet, and it's because we built them, and we were here first. We were here before the other peoples that migrated from mostly Asia that they migrated from and came here. And they're called the Native American and, you know, which Indian. They're
okay, so those natives that were here during that period of time kind of commingled with the Africans that were already here?
Not exactly. You know, I'm quite sure that you always have some, you know, commingling, but it was really a lot of wars that went on between the different racial groups. And, you know, we're the Olmecs. When they talk about history and they'll talk about the Incas, the Aztecs, and the Native Americans, But the Olmecs, you know, you hear that every now and then, but we're the Olmecs, okay? And it was already a civilization here, and that's why the Moorish navigators that navigated Christopher Columbus over here already knew what was here before he even arrived. Now, earlier you spoke something about the different treaties that were made. Now, because there was the Moorish Empire that was already established here and in Morocco, okay, that had jurisdiction over here, Morocco was the first country to recognize the United States as an independent country from Great Britain, from the colonies, okay, and Morocco made different treaties with the Europeans as to how things would be done in the event of, you know, we're defeated at war. You have rules of engagement, okay? And some of the treaties that were made established how long you could hold on to a slave. Whether or not we could trade, if you got some captives from war, can we trade? We'll trade the captives of war based on your captives of war, based on rank and different things like that. If you got one of our captives, we'll give you one of your captives. You got one of our generals, we'll give you one, so on and so forth. And so there were treaties that were made, and that treaty was what the movie Amistad was based on when that brother, you know, went to court to fight for his freedom, and he won it because they know that in their books that there were treaties that he was talking about that they had to honor. And so really all of us should have been able to debate that same thing, but because they kept us ignorant, they didn't want us to know anything, we had no idea of that.
Okay. We got about 5 minutes left in the conversation, and we have a caller on the line, so I'm going to see if they're interested in joining us. Okay, 4324, are you there? Would you like to join the conversation? 4324.
Yeah, I'm good. He's saying everything I was going to say, so I'm just going to listen.
Okay, go ahead. If you got a question or if you want to add anything.
Okay, I'm just going to listen. I've been saying everything I was going to say. You know, just touching on how we just have to remember that, you know, they falsely say when you see those people, they show as Native American. A lot of the times, they kind of like lie. You know, most of the time, it's us that wore those outfits and feathers, and you know, even with the cowboy thing, that's us again. They just use Hollywood to brainwash people to think when the colonizers came here, they were the cowboys, but. Pretty much, he was over here in this country before any other race was. That's just the bottom line. But that's all I got. I'm just going to listen.
Yes, sir. I I agree. I mean, there was a lot of history with the Wild Wild West and the black man, you know, because a lot of brothers that were fortunate enough to escape the slave making process, they ended up going out into the territories that they call, you know, Indian territory, the Oklahomas and, you know, our West, because those were not slave states. And they started, you know, what they consider to be, you know, cowboys. And one in particular was Bass Reeves. And Bass Reeves was the one that they call the Lone Ranger. And
the Lone Ranger.
People don't know that because when they made that program that came on once a week, they had a white man named the Lone Ranger and Tonto.
Mm-hmm.
Now Bass Reeves did have a Native American that rode with him sometimes, but his name wasn't Tonto. But Bass Reeves was the Lone Ranger.
Right.
Okay. We got a few more minutes, but I do want to continue this conversation about the Moors and about the Moorish history and as we transition into slavery and what slavery did to us. So we got about 2 minutes. Let's talk about what slavery did to us, and then we'll come back next weekend and do a part two. So how did that slavery impact us, and how do we lose our identity?
Well, once you lose your connection with your female, I mean, that's a great, you know, disconnection right there, you know, because now it's like you're enemies with your own female, and we have to patch that wound up, you know. Until we can fix that, you know, I don't think anything else is going to really work well until we can, like, earn the respect of our women back and start learning how to treat our women, and then they'll raise our children, you know, in a way that will be more productive because they'll feel more secure and we'll feel more secure as a community, and we'll start doing things in a way that is conducive towards building something, because the time is now.
All right. So we got about
today. Is there anything that you wanted to add before we close out this conversation? Carl, are you there? Sir, are you there? Okay, well, we're going to close out the show today. I want to thank you, Brother George, for the conversation that we had today. We'll come back next week and pick up on a part two. Caller, thank you for calling in today. I'd like to reach out to you as well so we can have another conversation, and maybe we can do something to continue the education of our people. This is Empowerment Network, Empowerment 365, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment for the African-American community. Join us every Saturday at 2 p.m. for Empowerment Saturday. It's a National American Empowerment show that talks about what happens in our community and what we need to do to not only change our experience, but to change ourselves. Once again, it's 365 days. Your main man, Marvin Rohn. Join us on the web, www.naaea.weebly.com. And you want to join the membership. We need your membership. We need, if you are African American, join the Empowerment Network, the Empowerment Association in your city or town. We want to spread the word that we're working together to form a better unity in our communities wherever we are. I'll talk to you next week. Peace.